The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 934. It's the 27th of November, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospects Oil and Gas at PXOG, and Ed discusses their commercial gas discovery onshore in Romania. Also on the podcast, Nick Lyth, CEO of Altona Energy, ANR's ticker there, and Nick discusses their assets and strategy going forward. Plus, it's a Monday, so Malky's on the podcast talking about Trinity Exploration, the TRIN, Range Resources, RRL, Cabot Energy, CAB, Amerisur, AMER, and Sound Energy, SOU. Plus, we have Connor Campbell from Spreadex. He's a market analyst, discussing the following stocks who have updates out this week: Pets at Home, Britvic, and Green King. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospects Oil and Gas. That's PXOG. Ed, thanks for joining me again.
Good morning.
Yeah, off the back of some positive news out today, we'll get that in a bit. The share price is reacting positively to that news, and we'll talk about that and what it means. Before we do, Ed, people tuning in right now are new to the podcast or they've not heard of the company. Explain, what is Prospects Oil and Gas all about, please?
Prospects Oil and Gas is an AIM-listed investment company specializing in oil and gas. We're an experienced management team that have been scouring Europe for the last couple of years. And we're in the process of, laying the foundations of an exciting, what we think is an exciting portfolio to build a mid-sized oil and gas company in Europe.
Excellent stuff. Okay. The share price has been up anything up to 60% up today. So it's looking good. So this is off the back of this news, which shows commercial gas discovery onshore in Romania. Of course, one of the wells being drilled there you're taking part in. Explain what was discovered, Ed, and what this means for the company.
Yeah, what was discovered. So we drilled this well into the Bennett Prospect. The Bennett Prospect sits in the block that we have at Suchava block, and for us it is a demonstration of concept to the market. The region there has a number of shallow gas discoveries producing on our block and the block next door, and we like the block on the basis that we felt that we could there's four or five prospects of this nature, and as indicated before, we think this is one of many. So we've got a starting point here. To build a sizable portfolio around this asset in Romania. Yeah.
Okay, and so you drilled a total depth of 600 metres, and you encountered 9 metres of reservoir with 8 metres of net gas pay, and good quality there. So explain there, and you're saying they're doing an 11-hour test, natural gas containing over 99% methane flowed at a rate of approximately 33,000 cubic metres per day through an 8-millimetre choke. Explain that, Ed, and explain, it says obviously commercial here. How commercial is this? Is this just, like you said, a starting step, or is this in itself significant?
Yeah, well, over the summer when we bought into it, I think the operator, and we guided to the market 1.5 BCF in total size. So we're comfortable with that. What we've done is perforate sort of half of the net reservoir, and by convention, you put out the flow rate. Now we've actually we tested the well for 3 days, and you start with The choke is the size of the tap that is open to allow the gas through, and then it comes up to the surface and you flare it off. You start with, you know, a tap open a small amount, and, you know, you then run a test like that. So you see how it flows. You see how the pressures change, and you build it up. So the last test we did was at 10 millimeters. It was for just a shorter period for an hour. But the, you know, 11, 12-hour tests will enable the reservoir engineers in time, once they've looked at all the data, to, you know, claim all sorts of information. So you asked about commerciality. Mm-hmm. This well can be tied on to existing infrastructure very cheaply. It's 1,500 meters per time you go around the edges of the fields. And what you do is, we've actually put in the announcement what it calls experimental. Now, in Romania, as part of the phase, you put on, for ultimately getting a production permit, you put it on experimental production. Now, that is 12 to 18 months. So what you and I, you know, the first stages of normal production. So, but we have obviously we're operating in Romania and we have a Romanian operator. So they use local language. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And so what are you saying? So what, it'll be on in production in what, 12, 18 months' time, is that right?
Oh, no. We think it will be on production second quarter of next year.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. And
so,
that,
you know.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. And so what's next, Ed, after this well?
What's next? Well, we're also drilling in Italy at the moment. We're participating in a well there. Which is the Selva block. Mm-hmm. And we'd hope to get, you know, results out of that, the drilling results in this December, and they'll test it in January.
Excellent stuff. Go on.
Yeah, so back in Romania, as I say, we've identified, you know, half a dozen prospects and continue to work with those. We're in the process of, I had an application to extend the license in with NAMRA, and we're all pretty hopeful that project will continue.
Yeah.
We've started on the ground. We've done a test of a geophysical technique called MT, magnetic tellurics, over. So that's quite interesting. Again, looking to de-risk potentially, you know, some of these prospects that we've been looking at. So active drilling, active doing some studies as well. And, yeah, push it all on.
So you're pleased, Ed, are you?
Oh, you've got to be. You know, you buy into something on the basis that you think you know what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
But it is exploration, and there's always a chance that these things don't work. So whilst we're always comfortable with having made the investment, you know, we're definitely pleased that it's heading in the right direction, and it's we've always thought is a key you know, foundation. I hope it's a foundation for a castle.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ed, listen, if people are listening to this right now, and obviously they're not following you yet on Vox Markets, but like the sound of the direction you're headed in, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
I think I've probably got half a dozen reasons why you should follow us, but I know I'm restricted to three, so they rotate over time. We're a strong management team which has had a history of successes in companies before Prospects Oil and Gas, and we're looking to do that again. We do have a, you know, strong news flow with portfolio in Romania and with Italy, and we're still looking to add to it. And that ultimately, you know, drives a strong news flow. So,
excellent, Ed. Good to chat to you. And like you say, you've got strong news flow. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much, Ed.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nicholas Lyth, CEO of Altona Energy. That's ANR ticker. Nicholas, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
I've seen you mentioned quite a bit, and there's a bit of interest you're gaining there on social media. It's nice to get you on. But Nicholas, for people who are not aware of what you're all about, please give a brief summary of the business, if you could.
Certainly. ANR, Altona, is listed on AIM, and we're a coal mine exploration company. We're based in South Australia, and we have a very significant resource there of estimated at 7.8 billion tonnes. Mm-hmm. And we're at the moment formulating an exploration strategy, and our intention is to convert the exploration that we have into shareholder value. And we are looking at various different ways that will enable us to do that.
Excellent stuff. Well, I mean, like you say, there's been a lot of change of late and over the last 2 months, and now you're formulating a strategy going forward. So take us through some of the change, some of the significant points, and that you think may be of interest, Nick, if you could.
Certainly. Well, up until fairly recently, we were pursuing an underground coal gasification strategy. Mm. And that was progressing, but we ultimately found that the South Australian government were modifying their licensing requirements. So it meant that the license that we had was not suitable for underground coal gasification, and we weren't able to obtain the license that was required for that. So we decided to change direction and focus instead on coal extraction and coal to liquid and coal to gas. Mm-hmm. So where we are now is that we held a placing in October and we raised a little bit over £200,000. What was important to us, we brought in two strong investors who have a lot of experience in the mining sector, and they were very interested to join Altona and participate in the placing. That took place. Subsequent to that, we've just raised £735,000 in an oversubscribed placing at 0.5p. Mm-hmm. The major shareholders who participated in October in the placing have also participated again. And I'm pleased to say that certain directors have participated, including myself, in the placing. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, the company has sufficient cash to prosecute the next phases of its exploration strategy. We're focusing on an area of our tenements called Westfield. Mm-hmm. We have several different tenements. The total estimated resource in our various different tenements is 7.8 billion tonnes. Mm-hmm. We're going to focus initially on the Westfield tenement. The reason for that is that the whole area is connected to what's called the Great Artesian Basin. So there are certain hydrological and water issues associated with that area. So what we want to do is identify potentially the driest area for that. And Westfield has the highest elevation, therefore we expect it to be the driest area in terms of the coal that we can find in there. So at the moment we have sufficient cash, mm-hmm. and our intention is that we've already commissioned an additional report by some consulting engineers called Runj Pincott Minarco Global. They're specialists in coal and in the hydrology of the Akaringa Basin, which is the area in which our tenements sit. What they're going to do is they're going to do an analysis and mapping of the seismic and the water table data in the Westfield area. And what that will do is provide information for us so that we can then move on to the next phase, which will be a full seismic survey of the Westfield tenement. Mm-hmm. The money that we've raised, the £735,000, will be used in part to pay for the seismic survey, which will be the next phase after the current commissioned report by Runj Pincott Minarco Global. Once we've had the seismic survey done, the phase after that is the development of a drilling program.
I understand. And time frame-wise, how long will this take, do you think, Nicholas?
The initial report that we're expecting to receive on the analysis of the seismic and water table data, we're informed by the consultants that it will take place and we should receive the results of that before Christmas. Immediately after that, mm-hmm. we will commence the next phase of the operation, which is to commence the analysis and of the seismic survey.
Okay, and as far as you're concerned, what's your background? Because I know you came from being a non-exec and now you're CEO. Take us through your background, if you could, Nicholas.
Certainly. I'm a qualified accountant. I'm a nuts and bolts finance director of engineering and accounting companies and manufacturing companies over the years. but I've done a lot of work in the corporate finance area, and I was asked to join the Altona board because at the time there was a significant Chinese element, and I speak Chinese and I used to work in China, so I was brought onto the board for that purpose. And then it was recognized that I was getting more and more involved with the operational side of the business, so it was decided that I should probably step up from a straightforward non-executive director position to the chief executive officer. That was only appointed a couple of days ago, so I'm looking forward to rolling my sleeves up and getting involved with the business.
Yeah, okay. And take us through, you know, what's the potential here? What's the market like, and what's the potential here? What's the ambition for the company?
Well, we've got a world-class resource. We have a resource which is estimated at 7.8 billion tonnes, mm-hmm. of which about 1.3 billion tonnes was compliant with the JORC standards that were in place at the time when we did the analysis. We also have a situation where the coal prices are moving very much in our favour. They've almost doubled in the last 22 months in the South Australian region. So the opportunities to extract coal and use different technologies to convert them into energy are increasing as the price of the coal increases. So that really is the opportunity that we see for Altona.
I see. And looking further forward, if everything goes to plan, when do you see yourself generating revenue from this?
We see ourselves as an exploration company. Mm-hmm. We don't see ourselves as the company that's ultimately going to bring the project to full development. The intention for us is that we've got an exploration project, we have a resource. Our job is to de-risk the project and de-risk it to the extent that one of the larger coal mine development companies would be interested in acquiring the business and then taking the business through to full production. We're not in the business of taking it through to full production. Our job is to de-risk the project to the extent that larger coal mine development companies will come in and buy the project from us.
Yeah, and obviously the resource is big enough for there to be interest here, is there?
The resource is huge.
Yeah.
If you look at the size of it, 7.8 billion tonnes is an absolutely enormous resource. The Westfield tenement that we're looking at initially on its own is about 800 million tonnes. And at the moment, we have a significant joint venture partner called Sinowaz, who signed up to the company to provide additional capital as and when we require it. The intention is that we're going to visit China very shortly. We're going to meet up again with Sinowaz, and we're going to discuss the next steps with them as soon as possible, because they initially came on board for an underground coal gasification project. We're converting this into a different sort of project where we're either going to dig the thing out of the ground and sell it if it's dry enough, or we're going to convert it into liquid, or we're going to convert it into gas if it's not quite dry enough. They initially came on board for an underground coal gasification. So what we intend to do is to go and talk to them and explain the steps that we intend to take to create shareholder value. We're confident that they're going to stay on board, mm-hmm. but we need to go and talk to them.
Yeah. Okay. And just before I get into the three reasons why someone should hit the follow button, explain again. So the next milestone is what, Nicholas?
The next milestone is the receipt of the Runge-Pincock-Minarco global analysis of the seismic and water table data.
Mm-hmm. And that's
We're expecting that before Christmas. Once we've got the results of that, we then move on to the next phase, which we've raised the money for, which is the seismic survey. Mm-hmm. After that, as a result of the seismic survey, we develop a drilling program. All the way through here, we're de-risking and de-risking and de-risking the project to make it more and more attractive to the big boys to come in.
Absolutely. Okay, excellent. Well, sounds very interesting. So if someone's listening and they're interested as I am in this, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button if they aren't already following you, Nicholas.
Certainly. Altona Energy has a market cap of £9 million as of today. But it has a world-class resource of 7.8 billion tonnes of coal estimated. In the South Australian region, the coal price has almost doubled in the last 22 months. So a number of different technologies are viable at the current rate of current price for coal. And finally, it's in a part of the world, South Australia, which is supportive of coal mining, and it's suffering a significant energy deficit. So we're getting a lot of support from South Australia to ensure that we're able to prosecute our strategy.
Excellent, Nicholas. Good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got some news out before Christmas, so hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, very well, thanks indeed, Justin. You, I hope?
Well, I'm all right, apart from feeling stiff from the weekend, trying to keep up with my kids on that one of those trampoline centre parks, you know, the thing where you go there, and I just couldn't do it. I came on the stairs today, aching with a bad knee, bad Achilles. I thought it was time to give that up. I was just disappointed, really. I thought I was doing quite well. But there we are.
You can't keep up with them, I'm afraid.
No, I know. So you mentioned before we came on, it's OPEC week. And so what are we likely to see, Malky? What's going to happen here?
Well, OPEC have a formal meeting twice a year, and this is the official meeting, which happens Thursday. And normally, the result of the OPEC meeting is certainly known to the key players in OPEC well before, and they don't like to have a long and drawn-out meeting. Normally, they'll expect to have a full meeting of everybody in the room, agree their policy statement, come out and meet the world's press and tell them, and then go shopping. Sorry, go home. And of course, that's made slightly more difficult at the moment because OPEC is working with non-OPEC, which obviously is primarily Russia, and the relationships between Russia and Saudi Arabia are very strong. So, you know, I think there'll be various, even more sort of off-site meetings during the next two or three days between the sort of key players in OPEC and non-OPEC. The impression is that although some of the people in the Russians, the sort of prime people, are saying that because the oil price is reasonably firm, we can sort of pull back a little bit and produce a little more, which would be absolutely just what the market didn't want. So I expect the meeting to announce that the agreement between OPEC and non-OPEC is rolled over. At the moment it's scheduled to expire at the end of March next year. I think that the market is probably expecting it to be rolled over for the whole of the year to the end of 2018, which would probably be, you know, very much in line with the best estimates. I mean, the oil price is in quite good nick. At one stage last week, West Texas nearly got to $60, and Brent's 65. Right now they're just a bit off that, 58.5 and 63.5 respectively. But you know, if you take and tell people about that in June when the oil price was $45, they'd have bitten your arm off. And $65 for Brent, even Sea Lion goes ahead and cruises through profitable production, especially given, as we've been talking about for a year or two now, you know, how much cost has been taken out of the industry. Yeah. So, you know, all these companies will be doing pretty well at the moment, and they expect the OPEC meeting to continue as it has before.
Yeah, I mean, what's your thoughts on these kind of talks, Mark? I mean, are you a fan of just letting the market does what it does, or do you think, you know, it can have a long-term beneficial effect, or, you know, or are they just, you know, essentially singing into the wind there? I mean, what do you reckon?
Well, there's no doubt that the cartel, as it is, wouldn't work efficiently. And if you mean efficiently, you mean to get the right market price if it wasn't regulated one way or the other. Now, the point is that if you're saying that, you know, it should be just market forces, and then this is what happens when OPEC sort of breaks up and they just produce what they like, and if the Russians produce what they like and everybody else did, then the oil price would be back to $30. Now, if that's your idea of efficiency, that's just fine. But funnily enough, the world didn't, you know, when, you know, the oil price had been at 110, 115 and went down, in fact, it went down all the way to 27, if you remember, the world didn't particularly like that because you know, the oil producing nations were in terrible trouble and they weren't investing. And of course, you know, when the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and everybody else is not investing, then, you know, we had the problems that we did. You know, for right or for wrong, it seems that if you can get to a level of $55-$60 for oil, that makes it happy enough for the producers and not dreadful for the consumers. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are plenty of people who would say you ought to let market forces dictate it. At the moment, if that was the case, it would be $30 a barrel. Your call, really, but yeah. You know, OPEC has always been that one or two players have got what's called the marginal barrels. You take enough oil off the, you know, if you can just be strong-willed enough to take the last few barrels off the marketplace, the price has to go up, as long as you don't and overproduce. And if you don't overproduce, you'll keep the price up.
Yeah,
simple
yeah.
as that.
Yeah. It's just, it seems like, you know, this. When the price goes down, obviously it takes the supply out, doesn't it? It seems to work efficiently like that. I just say any sort of market interventions on my thoughts is that, you know, it's just a temporary fix, you know. But there we are. What do I know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing is, of course, that what we're getting to the stage now is what I've been banging on about for 2 years now is that when the oil price came down, because the oil majors in particular have got huge dividends to which they have to be committed to, they take the capex out of the budget straight away. That's the one thing they can do. But it has about a 3 or 5 year lag. So if you take BP, for example, who Mad Dog 2, which is a big thing in the Gulf of Mexico, they cut that off completely. And, you know, when it comes down to it, that was something which would have come on stream in 2020. Now, you know, they're putting it back on again, and it'll come on in 2025. But if you count up all the other things that were cancelled that were coming on stream between 2020 and 2025, I think there's about $2 trillion worth of capex there. Yeah. So what happens is that, you know, although the oil companies say, that's brilliant, we've cut 30% from our capex budgets, there won't be the oil that market was expecting to come through in those years, which will create a shortage and the price will go up again.
Yeah.
They'll probably invest more then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, leaving the macro behind, let's get the micro. What stocks are you looking at, Melky?
Well, I'm going to talk about two of the Trinidad stocks after last week's announcements. So Trinity Exploration and Production and Range Resources. Then one or two others after that briefly. Yeah. Trinity and Range were in discussions about the sale of Trinity's West Coast Trinidad assets to Range Resources. Range is suspended at the moment. And they announced at the end of last week that the deal was off, had fallen through for regulatory reasons. Obviously, a disappointment because, you know, they were trying to reshuffle the assets and Trinity was going to concentrate on its East Coast stuff. But the, you know, taking Trinity first, they had a number of bidders for this asset when they put it up for sale. And there's no doubt that they'll just they'll remarket it in the new year. It's an asset which is producing very well. It's not a problem asset at all. Mm-hmm. It's producing very well. It's contributing cash to the company. They were just trying to slim down a little and concentrate on their East Coast assets. So there's no hurry for the sale to be restarted straight away. It doesn't affect the my 2018 investment profile or economics at all. Those numbers are looking very positive indeed. And I would say that Trinity remains one of the most profitable players in the area in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And it's got probably the most upside. If you look at the numbers, they're clean. The highly, you know, highly profitable. The numbers they have brought down. Like we're just saying, their cost base significantly in the last 3 years, which is why they're in such a good position coming out of this now. As for Range, they've still got a large onshore presence in Trinidad, so no worries there. They can concentrate putting all their money into their water flood program. They're also doing another acquisition in Trinidad, which is the drilling rig company, which is completing this week. So with their Indonesian acquisition, they've been very busy as well. So their Indonesian acquisition completed. The vote is this week on the shareholder vote for the drilling company is this week in Australia. I'm assuming that will go through. They've been suspended most of the year. I expect that to share to come back from suspension in early December. So, you know, quite these are, you know, two of the major players in Trinidad. It's a shame that the deal was didn't go through, but both companies in good nick. Trinity, very solid, most profitable, lots of upside from, you know, workovers and all the other bits and pieces. Plus, of course, they'll be drilling next year, so lots of upside for Trinity, and see how Range does when it returns from suspension.
Yeah, cool. All right, anything else, Marky?
Two very quick ones, or three possibly. I was looking at Cabot Energy the other day. Cabot used to be Northern Petroleum, and this one really was very, very close to getting into the end game a couple of years ago. And Keith Bush and his management team are taking this from almost the dead and buried and giving it the kiss of life, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
This company still has some acreage in Italy, which I don't rate very much, although they are farmed in with Shell there. But mainly what's happened here is that they've they've found the new beginnings by some quite interesting onshore acreage in Canada, in Alberta. And they're just plugging away, adding a few barrels here and there. And they put an announcement out last week saying that they're adding another, you know, few hundred barrels here and there. I would expect this company might be producing 1,000 barrels a day before too long. They've got a very supportive backer here. They've got plenty of acreage to drill. And they're using some quite interesting production enhancement techniques to benefit that production. So if you... You might have a few people who used to be in Northern, have now got Cabot, not quite sure what it's all about. It's turning into quite an interesting play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know how that's how you said it. I've been saying it wrong. I've noticed a couple of people mention it on social media, and I thought it was Cabot, but Cabot is the way.
It could be. No one's. I could be just as wrong. I'm sort of going back to my school geography days, and I think he was an explorer.
Ah,
Cabot,
I see.
And I call it. I was probably told to call it Cabot, but if you know, if he was in the States, he'd probably Cabot.
Yeah. Well, I'll bow to your greater knowledge there, Malky.
Quick word on two little stocks, short word on two big stocks. Mm-hmm. Amerisur, who announced last week that production had commenced in their Llanos Basin acreage. This is their second oil field in Colombia, which is most interesting because, you know, so far most of the people have been concentrating on their Platanillo acreage, and there's lots to talk about there with drilling a number of wells and ongoing much better conditions down there. And of course, way up north in the Llanos Basin, where they're in with ONGC, they announced that production has started there. This is important for them. It's going to be meaningful production. It's got it's a potentially very substantial basin. Therefore, they could have lots of upside. They have 30% interest in this, and so I think that that this one should be watched out for. As we go through December, we'll probably get their upgrade, which you'll say exactly what they are producing, because they're literally taking the liquids off and so on at the moment. I think that they'll produce a very reasonable amount from here. The company in total is targeting 7,000 barrels a day by the year end. I think they'll get through that easily enough. And with the southern stuff and now the added in northern stuff, they'll look to pick up that number quite substantially. I think that expect an exploration well in the first half of 2018 in the Llanos Basin. Potentially lots of upside from there.
Lovely. That's a matter. So AMER. Anything else, Mike? Is that it?
Well, just wanted to point out, I don't know whether you saw it on Friday, but Sound Energy
yep.
had a thing called a fireside chat, where instead of a conference call, they went on a special site that looked like it looked like a sort of fancy WhatsApp message, where the CEO, the exploration director, and the CFO sat down and took written questions on coming up on the screen from anybody who wanted to sign in and be on the thing. Now, the interesting thing, this is just a talking about sort of distribution of news and how people like Sound are treating retail shareholders significantly better nowadays. There were over 600 people on this call, or whatever you like to call it, and they answered nearly 200 questions. It may be a bit like you guys who are sort of shaking up your part of the world. This is shaking up, getting in touch and keeping close to your retail shareholders. A very interesting one, which shareholders can go on and go onto the website and just get reel back and look at every single question.
They got asked
everything. Most of them they could answer. Things are looking very prospective still in Morocco. And you can look at everything that they wanted to talk about, from the board members' salaries to the latest drilling plans for next year and so on. So just to say, that's another new thing for retail shareholders, which I know you're very keen on.
Yeah, well, I just think, you know, in the digital age where you can be in, you know, anywhere in the world, essentially, and communicate, you know. I mean, it's obviously nice to go to an investor event, you know, again, meet the other people, meet the other investors, and shake the hand of the CEO, look him in the eye. But sometimes it isn't practical, is it? And if you can do it via, you know, via sort of, some kind of chat like that, or a podcast, then it's ideal, because, you know, people driving to and from work and the commutes can listen to it or read it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just very, you know, I think very forward-thinking. And it's just convenience, you know, and life these days is very busy, so anything that's convenient will work, you know. So
and the more that companies do to look after their shareholders, the better it is.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that to, you know, communication is a two-way thing, and I think, you know, if you've got someone investing money, you should take the time and effort, like Sound is there, obviously, to communicate with those people, because they're risking their capital. So here we are. Marky, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Yeah, look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex. You're right, Connor.
Very good, thank you.
Excellent stuff. And of course, for new listeners, Connor comes on and he updates us on companies in the big end of the market cap spectrum, who'll be releasing updates this week. So, Connor, who are we starting off with?
We've got Pets at Home on Tuesday. It hasn't been a particularly good year for Pets at Home. It's sort of spent most of the summer, really, you know, between like June and August, trading at all-time lows.
Well, do you know what? Kind of I know. I bought some. I literally did scale in at what I thought was their bottom. I read the trading updates and they seemed to be getting better. And
yeah.
I couldn't see the sell-off. And I did take, literally, I think it was like a swift sort of 10, 15%, and I got out. And I haven't looked at the chart since. Haven't looked back since. So I don't know where they are. So what's happening? Give me the rundown then, Connor.
Well, the thing is, their figures, their last two updates have been pretty strong. Like, their full-year figures in May, pre-tax profit was up 5.8% to 95, like just over 95 million. Group revenue was up 7.2% to 834 million. On the services side of things, which is like the veterinary practices and pet grooming and stuff like that, which is an area that Pets at Home have sort of begun to move more and more into in the last couple of years. Like for like, revenue there was up 7.9%, which is, you know, that's a really healthy growth figure.
Yeah.
I think the main concern is that the retail division, which is obviously the majority of the company, is comparatively struggling. Like for likes, they're only up 0.8%. I think, you know, you can get a lot of the stuff in Pets at Home cheaper online and in other sort of, you know, stores that sell stuff like that. I think someone said places like B&M would sell plenty of the same stuff as Pets at Home.
Yeah, home bargains. Price. Yeah, and do you know what?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Near us, where Pets at Home are located, there's a couple of shops there, and next to them is Home Bargains, and you can get like straw and all that stuff in there as well. So, but there we are. Well, do you know what? I did jump in August when there's an all-time low, and it rallied. I did sell too early. I mean, just get the thing, because I sold it about. It rallied up above like £2. Yeah, 220 went from sort of 160 to 220. And I sold it about 185, 190. And then it came back down and went back up. But it's coming back down at 179. But anyway, carry on. Sorry, Connor. Go on.
Yeah, so August, first quarter figures in August. I think in May they said that they were going to revise their like pricing structure, basically try and become more competitive with those kinds of stores we were just talking about. And that does seem to have paid off. Like total like-for-like sales for first quarter are up 2.7%. Mm-hmm. With like services side, like for likes were up 10.5%, and then like for likes in the retail sector were up 1.5%, which is almost double what the full year figure was in May. So they're obviously, you know, the restructuring they've put in place is having some kind of effect. As you say, it sort of kept rising, rose above that £2 mark, and then I think, when was it, maybe September or October, it dropped to 8% in a single session because private equity group KKR sold like 120 million worth of stock, and that since then it's just sort of been wiped out and it's travelled back to around 180 and struggled to refind any momentum. I think, you know, it's a retail sector in the UK, horrible at the moment. There hasn't really been any news to help lift it above that level, but you know, its figures have been strong. If the second quarter was as good as that first quarter, then its half year figures, at least from a like for like and revenue perspective, are going to be, you know, pretty decent, especially if we can maintain that double digit growth in the services division. Obviously, investors will want to see how much this sort of, you know, cheaper prices, more competitive prices in the retail division has eaten into the interim pre-tax profit, so that could be a key figure as well. But our clients have been, you know, we've seen quite a lot of buyers around that 180 mark in the last couple of weeks. I think they're looking for, you know, the last couple of sets of figures have been pretty decent. There's no reason why if they produce similar figures on Tuesday that it can't, you know, bounce back towards £2.
Yeah, and also right now where it's settling, it is around about that 200-day moving average, which is a strong technical indicator for, you know, above the line, bullish, below it, bearish, you know, in a generic sort of term. So, this level seems to be holding. So 179, you know, around about there, 176, yeah, seems a good level. Okay, cool. Anything else, Connor?
Yeah, we've got Britvic. They report on Wednesday, full year figures on Wednesday. Had a very, very strong year. I think it sort of hit an all-time closing high of £7.81 at the start of November. Mm. Currently, it's up around 34% on where it was at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. Its figures have been good, but maybe not necessarily up 34% on the year good. Its half-year figures in May, it saw just to say, like Britvic, it's like soft drinks and stuff like that. It has, you know, like in the UK, Robinsons and Tango and R White Lemonade and J2O. And it also has in the UK and Ireland licenses for like PepsiCo drinks like Pepsi, Pepsi Max, 7-Up and stuff like that. Pepsi Max and the Pepsi side of things are sort of the big sellers, basically. Mm-hmm. Interim figures in May, revenue was up 11.5%, which was 3.7% rise at constant exchange rates, to 756 million. And then that compensated for a 7% drop in pre-tax profit. But that drop was mainly due to restructuring charges rather than... There was a bit of cost inflation thrown in there as well, but it was mainly the restructuring charges that you know, took the figure lower. Third quarter figures in July, again, pretty strong. Constant currency revenue was up 6.5% to 384.6 million. Volumes increased 2.6%. Average realised price was up 2.9%. In the UK, revenue was up 4.9%. I think sort of Pepsi Max and R White Lemonade. I think R White Lemonade may have seen like a rebranding recently. That took the carbonates division up 7.6%. That countered a 0.4% drop in like stills drinks, so stuff like Robinsons and Fruit Shoot.
Sorry, I like the fact there's a carbonates division. You must have been in the carbonates division. I bet they're a bubbly lot. I wonder if you've got the stills division, they're quite calm and relaxed. And that's, you know, if you join the company, that's how they say, oh, he's quite bubbly, get him in the carbonate division. Oh, he's quite calm, put him there. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, so in the stills division, I think sort of aggressive competition in that stills division, I guess, you know, from you know, cordials and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That dragged sales in that division 0.4% lower. And he's also had issues in Brazil where it sort of bought a few things in Brazil, but it's a challenging economic situation in Brazil. I think maybe sales were still up 24%, but that was compared to 36% growth the year previous. But overall, you know, a pretty decent result. It's sort of plateaued recently. It's been sort of ranging between 725 and 775. And it seems to have, like, thrice tested that, like,
it's gone a bit flat. Is it gone a bit flat? The bubble's come out a bit. Yeah.
It's the last couple of weeks. So I guess there is the danger that, say if that pre-tax profit situation has, you know, got any worse over the second half of the year, you know, if it's incurred a few more restructuring charges and stuff like that, it's climbed so high this year that I guess there is room for it to pull back a bit after Wednesday's full year figures. Like, it really depends on what that pre-tax profit figure is like for the full year, and I guess what its outlook's like for its upcoming financial year. You know, the disposable income's not doing too great in the UK. I think, you know, consumer confidence, according to a recent YouGov poll, is at its lowest level since Brexit. Mm-hmm. So it could be a very tough year upcoming for any kind of retailer, really, regardless of the nuances of what sector they're in within the retail sector. It's just going to be tough. So I think the reaction to the full-year results on Wednesday could really be dependent on what kind of tone it sets for the upcoming year.
Yeah, and just looking at that chart, like you say, it has tried three times now to get above 775, and it's come back off that. It's heading towards that now, 762. So maybe these results will give it a visit. The visit needs a pot above that, or maybe it'll just, like I say, lose its bubbles, lose its fizz, and head in a downtrend, because it's, you know, it's tried three times. Something's got to make it or break it there. So we'll see. Yes. Anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally we've got Green King on Thursday, sort of staying with drinks, but on the more adult side of things. It's their half-year figures on Thursday. Again, not doing too well. I think last week it hit a 5.5-year low on Thursday following Mitchell & Butler's, so, you know, sector peer. They posted a pretty worrisome full-year results themselves. I think they already said that they're not posting an interim dividend next year. Mm. Sort of sparked a battle of worry across the sector. You know, Marston's was down, Green King fell. And in terms of its figures, you can sort of see why it's maybe had a bit of a rough year. Its full-year figures in June, like-for-like pub sales were up 1.5%, which is pretty decent. Total group revenue was up 6.9% to 2.2 billion. Adjusted pre-tax profit was up 6.6% to 273.5 million. Hiked its dividend 3.6%. All those figures were fairly cheery. However, it warned that the quote is that the challenging environment will intensify over the next few years. And even though it did go on to say that it believes it's well placed to outperform the market, and that the squeeze on disposable income means that stuff like going to the pub, which is a comparatively cheaper activity to do in your free time than other things, you know, that will hold up. People will perhaps spend less in pubs, but it is still a cheap pastime in comparison to, you know, more expensive activities. So that should help it sort of withstand any economic challenges. Mm. Third quarter figures in September, however, so they sort of paint, you know, they sort of illustrated the issues that Green King highlighted in June. The update was very, very poorly received. I think the stock fell 15.5% in a single session. That was because pub company like-for-like sales were down 1.2%. It blamed a disappointing British summer, as well as the squeeze on real wages for the drop in like-for-like sales. I think other divisions were a bit better, like the brewing division. I think the brewing division still saw a drop, but it was a drop that was less than the sort of the wider sector. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the pub brands thing was okay. It's all struggling with food sales at pubs. Obviously, you've got food and drink inflation is pretty high at the moment. Again, it's not necessarily a great sector to be in at the moment, just because of the squeeze on real wages, the squeeze on disposable income puts stocks like this at risk. In terms of our clients, though, they have been buying around sort of the £5 mark, where the lows it's sitting at the moment, just because, you know, recently it's fallen on sector-wide news, but if its own individual performance is decent when it posts its half-year figures on Thursday, then perhaps it can get a bit of a bounce, just due to how poorly it's done in the last couple of weeks. But it is tough. And again, it will be what kind of outlook it gives for the second half of its year as well, I think will dictate how it moves on Thursday.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, it's a difference between that and Britvic. It seems to be the worries are priced in here, because like you say, it's at a bit of a low, but we'll see. The figures will tell the truth come Thursday. Connor, have a nice week, and we'll speak next week, fella.
Yeah, till next week. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Ascent Resources, AST. At four, Vesarion. Wow, it keeps powering away, hitting over 50 pence now. And I remember sort of initially buying those at around 14 pence average. So they're keeping on. It's the world of graphene. It's a massive blue sky opportunity. That's VRS. But do your own research, of course, and they've rallied strongly. At three, I updated the blog yesterday on Harvest Minerals, HMI. At two, Codal Minerals, KOD, in the lithium space. I've also written a blog about those. And number one, most followed company, we had Ed on earlier on, it's Prospect Oil and Gas, PXOG. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, 88 Energy, that's corporate presentation. At four, Anglas Energy and Power, ADL, new IPP project, gas sales, MOU, and joint venture. At three, United Oil and Gas, UOG, Latin American Farming Agreement. At two, Highlands Natural Resources, HNR, interim results. And number one, most liked RNS, again, our guest was Ed earlier on, Prospects Oil and Gas, PXOG, commercial gas discovery on shore Romania. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.